Chapter 9. While author Frank Capel's account of how Marilyn Monroe spent the last few hours of her life is worthy, the accepted details of how the film star spent her last few days were enhanced with shocking news in 2019. This is when the book Hollywood Godfather was released by author Gianni Russo, best known for his role in The Godfather as Carlo Rizzi, Connie Corleone's abusive husband who set up Sonny Corleone to be murdered. According to Russo, he first encountered Marilyn in September 1959, nearly 3 years before she died. This happened, he wrote, at Mafia Don Frank Costello's behest after the teenager began an internship at the Wilfred Academy, a beauty school of sorts in New York City. At the time, Russo, a runner for Costello, who was an acquaintance-slash-friend of Dorothy Kilgallen's, as will be explained, had been busted for being truant from school at age 15. To keep Russo, who said Costello always called him the kid, from being punished, the mobster enrolled him at Wilfred, located in the heart of the theater district that Kilgallen would later rule as the Queen of Broadway through her Voice of Broadway columns. Ironically, the connection between Russo and Kilgallen would spread to her main hairdresser, Mark Sinclair, since he was working at the time, as noted in The Reporter Who Knew Too Much, at the Lily Dachet Beauty Salon on East 56th Street. As will be noted, the address for the salon is included in Marilyn's private telephone book, confirming part of Russo's account. Regarding Sinclair, Russo confirmed the hairdresser's account that Jackie Kennedy was also a client at that beauty salon. This happened during Russo's radio appearance with this author in late March 2020. In addition, he had stated in his book, "The clients there included the entire female side of the Kennedy clan, plus Marilyn Monroe, Judy Garland, and many other Hollywood notables." Mark Sinclair was a renowned hair colorist. Backing up Russo's credibility is a June 27, 1970 New York Times article entitled Mark Sinclair on His Own. In part, it read, "Mark Sinclair, the hairdresser, has moved up in the world, physically, that is. He had left his underground stand at the Charles of the Ritz Salon and moved into sunny, airy quarters of his own on the second floor of the townhouse at 115 East 55th Street. Although Mr. Sinclair, 35, is the blue-eyed darling of many long-maned socialites and has been a hairdresser for 15 years, he has never had a shop of his own. Before his sojourn at Charles of the Ritz, he followed Kenneth as the star of the now-defunct Lily Dachet shop." Additional information about Sinclair, called by Vogue magazine one of the world's top 10 hairdressers in 1966, appeared in the St. Petersburg Times when he died in 2006. The obituary read in part, "A top hairdresser, he made Marilyn Monroe's locks look good enough for a Time magazine cover." Concerning his having met Marilyn, Russo wrote that one day in 1959 he served several customers by washing their hair before a lovely customer began moaning as he massaged her head. She thanked him for being good at this before, as he said, "It hit me. I was shampooing Marilyn Monroe." Russo added, "Marilyn was very friendly. After a few visits and my talks with her at the salon, I got over the movie star hype and saw her as an average person, albeit with a dynamic body. We had similar backgrounds, and I thought she could confide in me and felt that I'd understand what she was saying. Both of us had been abandoned as kids, me to the polio war, her to the orphanage." Days later, Russo said he was summoned to the Waldorf Astoria Hotel for a private shampooing. To his amazement, Marilyn, as beautiful as ever at age 33, disrobed before taking a bath, something the youngster had not counted on. When she said, "Come join me," Russo swore he did so, and one thing led to another, with the twosome spending most of the entire weekend in bed. In his book, Russo wrote, "I had a secret that could never be guessed. I'd just had sex with America's hottest movie star and sex symbol. Russo claimed that he and Marilyn met several times after that in New York City. Providing insight into Marilyn just 3 years before she died, he wrote, "Her tastes were simple. She liked walking over the Brooklyn Bridge, loved the view of Manhattan at night from the Brooklyn side. Marilyn liked the freedom of being with a regular person like me, and the anonymity of being able to go anywhere she wanted without being mobbed by fans. One of her favorite things was for us to go to Central Park and just walk and talk." The Marilyn that Gianni Russo knew went through many changes, not all of them good ones, during the months leading up to the last week of July 1962, when the drum roll of Marilyn's demise took place. By then, Russo had been accepted, like the older mobsters, and he was invited to the notorious Cal Neva Resort, located on Lake Tahoe on the California-Nevada border. Russo wrote that most of what he knew had come from the lips of Marilyn, who had told him the Cal Neva was owned by Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin, but that mobster Sam Giancana was the major silent owner. In fact, Marilyn had been detailed about her appearances at the resort, telling Russo she occupied cabin number 4, Sinatra cabin number 5, and that the Kennedy clan occupied cabin number 3. Russo wrote, "The Kennedy brothers, most notably John and Bobby, would go there often and be treated to a platoon of hookers, courtesy of Sinatra." Costello, Russo said, had basically ordered him to the meeting at the Cal Neva during that last week of July 1962 to be his eyes and ears as to what happened. He wrote, "In attendance was Sinatra, Sam Giancana, who wasn't in a good mood, along with bodyguards, and Marilyn Monroe. I was told to stay away from Marilyn. She was part of the plan." During her stay at Cal Neva, Marilyn wore the infamous lime-green, long-sleeved, boat-neck, poochie blouse of silk jersey, size 14, sporting a label that read, "Emilio Pucci, Florence, Italy," and "Made in Italy exclusively for Saks Fifth Avenue." She had worn the same blouse during her rehearsals for singing Happy Birthday to JFK at Madison Square Garden. Russo recalled that there was some sort of plan involving Marilyn, whom he described as not being the Marilyn I'd remembered, since she appeared to be using drugs and was high. As for the plan, Russo said he learned that Marilyn was to have sex with both John and Robert Kennedy, and the session would be filmed and used to extort the Kennedys to conform to the demands of the mob. When Marilyn learned of what was intended for her, in effect a secretly recorded twisted menage a trois, Russo wrote, "She lit into Bobby right in front of me and anybody else within earshot, stating that she was through with the Kennedys, that she had been used and always been used by them and she'd had enough." Russo added, "JFK had promised Marilyn once he was elected he would divorce his wife, Jackie, and marry her. Marilyn believed it at the time, but now she wasn't falling for anything involving the Kennedys. And not only that, she was going to the press and tell them what the Kennedys were really like." During the March 2020 radio appearance with this author, Russo, who pegged Marilyn as a victim, a rag doll being passed around, said he actually heard Marilyn screaming from her cabin, so upset over the plan to film her having sex with the Kennedy brothers. Whether Marilyn was more upset with the Kennedys or those who intended the filming is uncertain, but one logical explanation is that she was furious with both, but perhaps more so at Bobby. Continuing with the interview, Russo expanded his recollections of the infamous Cal Neva gathering, stating, "About Marilyn's death, when I left Cal Neva that Sunday, I met with Mr. C., Costello, on Monday morning at the Waldorf in NYC to let him know blow by blow the goings-on for that weekend. Mr. C. liked everything in chronological order as it happened. After my telling him what Marilyn was yelling about going to the press that Saturday night, his mood changed. We both knew her time was limited. I felt bad because I couldn't let Mr. C. know my previous involvement with her. He added, "What I witnessed during those years nobody was privileged to know. I was loyal to Frank and La Casa Nostra and the syndicate." Without question, Marilyn was in danger since the blonde bombshell was now a time bomb waiting to explode by going to the media with tell-all secrets that the Kennedys could not tolerate. The drum roll to her death had begun. Marilyn's appearance at the notorious Calneva Lodge, witnessed by Russo, is confirmed as happening on July 28th and 29th, 1962. A month before that, author Edwin Hoyt reported in his book, Marilyn, the Tragic Venus, that she attended a party for the United States Attorney General at Peter Lawford's on June 26th. Confirmation that Dorothy Kilgallen was aware of the Hoyt book and thus Marilyn's visit to the Lawfords came from a review of that book, as noted in her column provided in August 1965, 4 months before she died. An eyewitness to Marilyn's visit 2 days later to the Calneva was celebrated jazz and pop singer Buddy Greco. In a 2010 interview with the UK's Daily Mail, he said, "Marilyn was fragile, very fragile," echoing another account by Rupert Allen, a publicist for Marilyn. He stated, "Marilyn was distraught and heartbroken. She felt the Kennedys had handed her around like a piece of meat." Greco's account was quite insightful. He reported, "When Marilyn arrived that Saturday, you'd never believe she had a care in the world. I was sitting with Frank, Peter Lawford, and a bunch of other people outside Frank's bungalow when a limousine pulls up and this gorgeous woman in dark glasses steps out." Regarding Marilyn's attire, Greco said, "She's dressed all in green, everything green, coat, skirt, and scarf. Before I realized who it was, I thought, my God, what a beautiful woman. No taste in clothes, but what a beautiful woman." Of note is that there is no mention of Marilyn's relationships with either John or Robert Kennedy, Frank Sinatra, or the infamous hotel rendezvous described by Gianni Russo and Buddy Greco in the book My Sister Marilyn. Either Bernice Miracle did not know about it having occurred or left it out on purpose, deciding not to delve into that sad episode of her sister's life. When examining Marilyn Monroe's actions within those final days of her life, it becomes important to consider a column written, amazingly enough, by Dorothy Kilgallen on August 3, 1962, the day before the actress died. It appears to connect her with Robert Kennedy rather than JFK, who had cut off his relationship with Marilyn, apparently at the insistence of Joe Kennedy much earlier. What Kilgallen wrote must have increased the need for the Kennedy clan to take action against Marilyn before she made matters worse with possible disclosures to the public about her affairs with the Kennedy brothers or matters of national security, such as JFK's trusting Marilyn with top-secret unidentified flying object, UFO data, the president was aware of, as will be revealed. The Voice of Broadway headline was, "M.M. has Hollywood talking again," and the text that followed read, "Marilyn Monroe's health must be improving. She's been attending select Hollywood parties and has become the talk of the town again. In California, they're circulating a photograph of her that certainly isn't as bare as the famous calendar, but is very interesting." Kilgallen also wrote, "Marilyn's dress looks as if it were plastered to her skin. And she's cooking in the sex appeal department, too. She's proven vastly alluring to a handsome gentleman who is a bigger name than Joe DiMaggio was in his heyday. So don't write Marilyn off as finished." More examination of this column's entries based on Kilgallen's credible sources in Hollywood will follow, but suffice it to say that her reference to Marilyn being alluring to a handsome gentleman who is a bigger name than Joe DiMaggio was in his heyday points directly at Robert Kennedy being that gentleman since her affair with JFK, as noted, had ended much earlier. Who else can the gentleman be other than the Attorney General? While Kilgallen was connecting Marilyn to RFK during the last days of her life, Bobby, who ironically had been awarded a Father of the Year citation only months before, began a holiday with his family in San Francisco. Hearing from Peter Lawford must have spoiled the fun, since Lawford would have told RFK that Marilyn was now threatening to disclose private, damaging information about the Kennedys, even distribute tapes, apparently audio tapes, of conversations she had with Bobby to the media. Whether these tapes existed or not, Marilyn was on a mission. She was going to go public if RFK did not contact her and explain why he had ended what she believed was a special relationship with arguably the second most powerful man in America. That year, family members who knew RFK as the sex policeman for the family, the one who supposedly cleaned up the messes caused by various affairs and such, joked that he would cut off his arm to save the family from scandal if need be. Now he was front and center with a potential scandal of his own making, and this time the foe was not dangerous mobsters like Carlos Marcello or Sam Giancana or other enemies he had made as Attorney General, but a famous 36-year-old platinum blonde actress who had apparently fallen in love with him. Now that scorned lover was threatening not only the Kennedy family reputation, but his own, since, although wife Ethel must have known of his philandering ways, akin to those of his father Joe and brother John, as long as Bobby was discreet, this was okay. But if the affair splashed into the media and embarrassed Ethel, as Marilyn was apparently threatening, that would be a different story. What to do? RFK must have pondered. One may only imagine the anger he must have felt. The powerful Attorney General could handle mobsters, those of ill repute, even J. Edgar Hoover, but he couldn't seem to control the woman whose mental state was shaky since she had been using barbiturates to calm her mind and get some sleep. What might be called the Bobby factor was the main reason for the turmoil in Marilyn's life. Kilgallen had reported she was on an upswing in her life, but treatment by the Kennedy boys was a black cloud that would not disappear. To her detriment, she had fallen into the evil nest of the Kennedys, led by Joe and perpetuated through sons John and Robert, each obsessed with power, money, and, unfortunately for Marilyn, demeaning women for sex and only sex. To that end, JFK, as recalled by British Prime Minister Harold Macmillan, had said, "If I don't have sex every day, I get a headache," which could have been uttered by either Joe or Bobby. Added to the Kennedy mix was the roustabout Peter Lawford, an adulterer like Joe, JFK, and Bobby. 4 years after Marilyn died, and 3 following JFK's assassination, Lawford's true colors resulted in a nasty divorce from wife Pat. In Charles Higgum's biography of Rose Kennedy, he wrote, 1966 began on a sour note with Pat Kennedy's civil divorce, the first Rose had had to endure in her family, from an increasingly drunken, drug-riddled, and shockingly aged Peter Lawford, no longer the lazy charmer of motion pictures, who had inherited from his mother's disgusting private and public behavior. The result? Pat was awarded custody of the couple's 4 children. Yes, Marilyn, being immersed in the Kennedy family nest, packed with liars and sexual deviants, never found the true family love and affection she sought from her childhood days. In view of her dreams, one may consider again what Jim Doherty, Marilyn's first husband, wrote in his book, The Secret Happiness of Marilyn Monroe. Norma Jean always sought the approval of others. She wanted to be liked because she'd been parceled out just so much love, not enough, perhaps, from each foster home she'd lived in. Later, she wanted love from fans, from audiences, from the whole damn world. The whole world would have included the Kennedys, and with this type of inner turmoil, her wanting to be liked and loved, she was a perfect victim for the lecherous band of powerful men. It's a wonder Joe didn't attempt to seduce her, or maybe the rotten patriarch did so. That would have been no surprise. One factor rarely considered in how Joe, JFK, and Bobby escaped wrath is that Rose Kennedy was an obvious enabler. In the Higham biography, he wrote, "Her husband's infidelities never bothered her. She had turned a blind eye to Jack's own alleged affairs, particularly his supposed relationship with Marilyn Monroe. Such were the transgressions of men the world over, which women must endure in order to secure their homes and their children's welfare." Bottom line, Higham reported, divorce and adultery were simply not in Rose's vocabulary. If Rose, who died at the age of 104 on January 22, 1995, had spoken up, had she condemned the notorious actions of her husband and sons, and possibly put a stop to them, would Marilyn Monroe have lived past her 36th birthday? We will never know.